Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
Hey, I cannot believe it is Tuesday, December 10th, 2019. Brady Wright, Shane Osborne, and Steve, the producer, Johan, joining millions, billions, gazillions, and quadrillions of listeners on this 115th episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
115.
That's right. Wow. You can find us on iTunes and iHeart Podcast, Spotify, of course, Podomatic.com. Make sure you like and follow our Facebook page because we need the validation for ourselves. Our egos are so small. Our first segment is always back to the blacktop, he says. Steve Johan has automotive news and information as usual. Stuff today, I guarantee you, this week he did not make anything up. What have you got?
Well, GM having problems with keeping up with the new truck demands, which is a good thing since the UAW strike is over. Mm. Workers are now back on the floor building trucks. Some are even getting overtime. Ooh. For the fact that some of the dealers have depleted reserves and they're in need of GM trucks.
And just because they weren't building them doesn't mean the dealers weren't selling them.
Well, that's right. Yeah. That's right. So good. We like to hear that kind of good stuff.
You bet. Now, the economy, by the way, is absolutely killing it.
Yeah.
The economy is screaming. It's just marvelous to see.
Well, interestingly enough, speaking of GM,
yes,
Hollywood's Walk of Fame will have a new star added to it soon, but this time it will be in the honor of the Chevrolet Suburban.
Oh, man, I thought you were going to say the Aztec or the Avalanche.
No, the Chevrolet Suburban, the first car to ever get its own star.
And we know what the history of the Suburban is, right?
Well, go ahead.
No, it's fine. Go ahead. You got it?
Okay, well, according to Hollywood stats, the Suburban has had a longest and most active career in Hollywood history, logging an estimated 1,750 appearances in films and TV shows over the past 67 years. The Suburban began its cinematic career back in 1952, according to General Motors, and has gone on to appear in at least one TV series every year since 1956, as well as a minimum of one film annually since 1960. I think that is pretty cool. And if you ever watch any of the FBI, CSI, police, blah, 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 Blue Bloods, they're running around in black Suburbans.
Oh, sure they are, of course. Well, 24.
Yeah.
That was all the thing. I always wanted one of those Suburbans from 24 with the rollout drawer from underneath the back seat where that, you know, is full of guns and stuff. That's like, is that a factory option that I can get?
Wouldn't that be great with your collection?
Security thing. Sure, that'd be great. The Suburban, as we know, is also famous for being the longest continuously manufactured model of any other vehicle. Now, was it 50, 51? No, 40. We did this one time. It's one of the trivia questions. Now
right.
I can't remember. It's 46 or 47, whatever the first Suburban was.
Well, it began at least in 52, so making them in 52.
Yeah.
Which, you think about that, I don't even know any cars that were built in 52 that are still being built today.
Well, everybody thought it was the Corvette.
That's right.
You know, and it was, I mean, certainly, 53,
though.
But, no, the Suburban predated it by a couple, 3 years. I want to say 48, but
right.
I'll probably be wrong. Somebody, Nathan Lipinski, will call us and tell us.
Well, and Nathan is a great fan. We need thousands of Nathans out there because Nathan, I get emails from him or posts and it just say, great job, guys.
Yeah.
Love the show.
Well, he's not the only one, and we thank him for that.
We do. And then, but I just thought that was really cool.
It is.
The
it's
first
cool.
car ever. And let's hope, That's wonderful. Good news, bad news. Global car sales are expected to fall by about 3.1 million in 2019, a bigger drop than in 2008. Fitch Ratings economics team said this week, citing data collected by the International Organization of Motor Vehicle Manufacturers. The slowdown in auto sales has contributed to a drag on global manufacturing. Sales have been steady here in the States as consumers feel positive about jobs, so they are willing to go into debt to purchase new ones.
Hmm.
So the fact is they know that even if they lose a job, there's enough other jobs out there that they can keep that payment up. But on a worldwide scale, sales are down. A lot of that has to do with China. I know China's been down every month for the last, 6, 8, 9 months?
Yeah.
At least a year. But good news for us here in the United States. And then, More on the battery front, as General Motors is teaming up with supplier LG, yes, those guys, Chem, to form a new joint venture that will see them invest up to $2.3 billion, that's $2.3 billion, to produce batteries for GM's planned wave of battery electric vehicles coming by 2023. So here we go again. Everybody's investing into electronics, into electrical cars, battery.
Well, it's the new, you know, speculation.
It's really a speculation.
But, I mean, good for them. Why not? But, you know, lately, the Facebook has been just completely crammed with memes all about the Tesla truck, and now they got the Tesla fifth wheel and the Tesla motorcycle and the Tesla. I mean, it's pretty hilarious because they're just, you know, whatever you can fold up out of sheet aluminum.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
Well, you know, I got to hand it to Elon Musk because he's created a lot of buzz, even though his debut sort of failed.
Right.
Because they threw a rock through the supposedly impregnable window. But, you know, that's how you get money for doing more development and
R&D. Yes,
R&D.
He is the P.T. Barnum of automotive. But
yes,
speaking of Tesla.
Yes.
Well, instead of the usual distracted or drunk driver hitting a parked car, we get this. Out today, a Tesla in autopilot mode hit the back of a state police car in Connecticut Saturday.
That's probably not a good idea.
State police say troopers were stopped to deal with a disabled vehicle in the center lane when the Tesla crashed into the cruiser. They say the Tesla hit the disabled vehicle next and then kept going for several hundred feet before it was stopped.
Oh, it was moving.
According to troopers, the driver of the Tesla said he had his vehicle on autopilot and was checking on his dog in the back seat before the collision.
Of course he was.
Now, I could just see I won't say that.
This is why I am not a fan. I mean, I like the technology, but I'm not a fan of this whole autopilot thing, even though, in all fairness, I drove one of the Cadillac, you know, Super Cruise. It's a beautiful piece of work, but there's just so many potentials for misuse. You know, I'm going to just put this thing on go, and then I'm going to check my Facebook or whatever it is you do, you know?
Well, and we have enough problems with distracted drivers, with texting, with drunkenness. Now we're going to have autopilot on top of that.
Well,
I thought the idea is when you were distracted, the autopilot takes over and prevents you from hitting something. And here we find out that it doesn't. And they've had other issues with other vehicles running on autopilot where they've had wrecks and people have died and pedestrians getting hit. AAA has a report on that. Says, we're not for the autopilot because our tests are showing that pedestrians get hit.
A lot of R&D still out there to be
done. Yes, there is. Well, effectively, immediately, three-time NASCAR Cup Series champion and NASCAR Hall of Fame inductee Tony Stewart has officially acquired the Indiana-based UMRA King of the TQ Midget Racing Series and rebranded to the All-Star Circuit of Champions TQ Midgets. So if Shane was in here, he would tell us all about this because he's a big short track racer fan and all that. So
he's built a couple of midgets too.
Yes, he has.
Yeah, the three quarters. That's a fun series because they're big enough to be, you know, cars, but small enough to be fun. And you know the criteria for safety and everything are the same, but they're just so much quicker.
Yes.
You know, response time is just fascinating.
And they're not the size of a cart, which is smaller.
Right.
But these are definitely the three-quarter midgets, and they've been popular forever.
I mean,
they were big back in the 60s.
So does it say in the story how he came to buy this? I mean, what was the motivation? Is he
no,
looking for another power base?
But I think he's just he's well-known in the industry, and I think he's just looking at an opportunity. Hey, just like the former racer, Penske,
doing the
same thing with the – I think these guys have been around, and they're going – We want to put an our background in what we know that drew us to it. We want to incorporate that, and we want to infuse that. And I think this is a great job because you got people that are racers. They understand it, and I think it's going to go well. So good luck to him.
No kidding. Well, hey, thanks for tuning in. Coming up on the Windshield View, we are going to chat with a collector of, are you ready, Chandler automobiles. This is very cool. All of that and more is coming up on Horsepower Chrome and Rust. Cartoons Magazine is back. You know those crazy car comics from the past. They've returned in the all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of brand new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine full of one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available at your local comic book store, newsstand, and directly through Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com. That's cartoonsmag.com, where you can subscribe to a whole year's worth of fun. Cartoons Magazine, there's nothing else like it.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We first opened about 10 years ago. We were small, just a few of us, but it was exciting. I always dreamt of having my own business. It was kind of slow at first, but things started picking up. We had big plans, but in our wildest dreams, we never, never thought we'd have this much work. Yeah, with so many businesses caught off guard by the storm, Reed Waste Management has never been busier.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency. And 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business.
Oh, come on, guys. I got to go home and think of something funny. Well, the best I can do is, hi, this is Jeff from Cruising Northwest. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Hey, does that rhyme?
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Hi, it's Jeff Conwell with the Monsters and Manson, giving a big shout-out to everyone at Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust is back with the first half of the Windshield View, and this week we're talking with Roger Anderson, who collects, of all things, Chandler cars. So welcome to the show, Roger.
It's fun being here.
Yeah, Roger's saying that because he's been watching us in between when we're not on the air. We do goofy stuff and talk about things that have nothing whatever to do with this show. But I promise you, we are going to talk about your collection. I have to ask. I'm familiar with Chandler just because I know the mark, but how did you get started with Chandlers? It's kind of a non-traditional choice.
I started with Chandler because my 1925 Chevrolet touring car had 26 horsepower and couldn't keep up with the bigger cars on the car club tours.
Yeah.
And so this Chandler came along and had about 45 horsepower.
Oh, speed demon.
And the price was right. In any decision, price probably is the number one thing you think about.
Yeah, most of us aren't the money is no object crowd. So,
and
yeah.
Other people in the club looked at it before I did, and they were afraid of it because it needed a few things, and nobody heard of a Chandler and were kind of afraid to tackle it. And those that thought they knew about a Chandler were confusing it with Chalmers, which is actually part of
Alice
Chrysler's
Chalmers.
Former, you know.
Right, the farming implement guys. I have an Alice Chalmers grill shell that was in my garage for a long time, which I actually is now hanging on the wall up at E-Company Customs as wall art. But so give
Roger,
us a little...
Roger, what year was this?
Well, I was going to say, give us a little background on the Chandlers, you know, in the first place.
So my first Chandler was acquired in 1962. I needed parts, including the front wheels. There was somebody else in the area that had a 1920 Chandler sedan that had an extra two front wheels, but he didn't want to part with them, even though he didn't need them. A couple years later, his auto parts business goes belly up.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to sell his sedan and the wheels.
There you go.
And like a vulture, I swoop in And now I have two Chandlers.
Okay.
And some parts.
Now, what do you happen to know? I mean, we can look this up, and we'll certainly post some information about Chandlers on the website and the Facebook page when we put the story up. What years did Chandler operate?
So Chandler organized late 1912. In 13, they came out with their Model 14. They always promoted their car model as something a little bit newer than the year it was put together. And so from there on up through the fall of 1928, they built cars, Chandler cars. And in the fall of 28, they sold the company to Hupmobile.
Okay.
Hupmobile kept building Chandlers for about another 6 months and then discontinued them.
Interesting. So do you have a a figure for how many cars they may have made in total?
It's
ballpark?
Kind of guesstimated they made 300,000 during a 16-year period.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Wow.
I wonder how many of those are still around. I mean, that's a goodly number.
That's a goodly number. I guesstimate 200, maybe.
Yeah. Now, and so where was the company located?
So the company was located in Cleveland, Ohio.
Ah.
And it was started by executives that jumped from the Lozier Automobile Company.
Okay.
And formed their own company and named it after Chandler.
You know, back in those years, there were a lot of companies. I don't want to call them Me Toos because that's not really fair. But there were smaller companies, more kind of boutique manufacturers who made a few cars or a few hundred thousand cars, I guess, based around the vision or, you know, a financial group of, you know, a few people. And a lot of times, you know, these guys were in the, I don't want to say the Midwest, but back east is a little bit optimistic for where they were. But I would imagine that most of those vehicles that they sold over that time period are probably headquartered in the east and the south, perhaps. I don't know, how many of them made it out to the west coast, do you suppose?
A lot of the small orphan car companies had kind of a regional market.
Mm-hmm.
Chandler's people who came from Lozier had connections globally.
Ah, okay.
And some of them had been in Europe for Lozier and, you know, networking and all that kind of thing. So Chandlers were sold all over the world. I've got literature that shows them in Japan and South Africa.
That's fascinating.
Up in Sweden and Great Britain. And
you know, and in Lozier, how long was that company around? I mean,
Lozier Company, I'm not too up to speed on, but they were building bicycles and motorboat engines before 1900.
Hmm.
And by around 1916, I think they disappeared. They were a high-priced, high-performance luxury car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a Lozier, stripped of its fenders and whatever, came in second place at the first Indy 500.
Is that right?
Wow.
I wouldn't be surprised if I have seen a picture of it, because I've been to the Indy Museum, you know, the one that's at the track, and which is a fascinating place. But I couldn't swear to it because it's, you know, been long enough that I'm sure I don't remember. Tell me about the Chandler. Every car, every manufacturer has a certain kind of a marketing point, like its styling or its power or its versatility or something like that. What was the main selling point of the Chandler? What was its
The Chandler people decided they wanted to cover the mid-priced range.
Okay.
So keep away from Overland and Ford and Chevy.
Right.
Don't go up there with Cadillac and Pierce Arrow and those people.
Sure.
So they were kind of in the same area as Hudson and Buick.
Okay. Terraplane.
Page.
Well, would have been Terraplane.
Terraplane came.
Yeah, later.
Deckard later.
Yeah.
And they, after the Chandlers first came out, they came out with the Cleveland automobile.
Okay, I've heard of
this. Which was a little bit smaller, covered the lower part of the medium price range. Mm-hmm. And then in 1926, instead of running the two companies separate by the same major stockholders, they just went ahead and merged into one corporate structure.
Hmm. Now, these, I'm assuming, just given the time frame, that these things started out as open cars. Were they all open cars, or would they have some closed body sedans and stuff too?
They offered enclosed bodies as well as open.
Nice.
When they first started, there was a roadster, a touring car, a sedan, and a coupe.
Oh.
In about 1919, open cars were about 90% of the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By 1929, it was totally reversed.
Right. Right.
And along the way, Chandler increased the different body styles they offered, and it could have been something that made them struggle because they were sort of competing with themselves.
Well, that's always a possible conflict. We're going to continue with this. I know there's a ton of stuff that I got to ask you about these things.
And
but,
he's got a cool book here, actually,
all right.
About it.
Well, we'll definitely delve into that. So stick back on the other side. We're gonna have more from Roger Anderson, and we're going to have another story from the old Car Nut books. And I'm going to personally find out what the styling cues for the Chandler car was. So stick with us. This is Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
More Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust after these messages.
Hey, car enthusiast, are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
This is Jerry Heasley, and you're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, the greatest show I've been on in at least the last year.
Nurse, set up an IV. And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the app.
Back in the second half of the Windshield View, we're talking with Roger Anderson, who owns 18 Chandler automobiles. And welcome back, Roger. We were just before the break, we were talking about, you know, the styling cues and what it was that kind of set Chandler apart from the other cars of the period. And you said something there that I kind of wanted to jump on just for a second. Up until about 1929, you know, they were doing what they were doing. They had gone from open cars to closed cars. Coincident with the start of the Depression. And I'm sure that right about that time, some changes happened at the Chandler factory, as it did with so many others. What? Tell us a little bit about that.
So for styling and appearance, they were very similar to their peers.
Uh-huh.
In the front, the radiator shape was very similar and copied from Lozier,
okay,
where it flared out towards the bottom. And on the rear of open cars, Roadster and Touring, the window, bevel glass window, is in the same shape as the radiator badge.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of a Lexus look early on.
So it looked like the shape looked like a dog biscuit.
Yeah, okay, all right.
And the smaller Cleveland car, their rear window shape looked like a peanut. So
like
you
it.
Could tell from the rear,
sure,
up until about 1925, either way,
sure,
what was coming
so
or going.
What, so if we were going to talk to you about your collection, amongst other things, what years do you have? I mean, you got 18, so don't go through all of them, but what's your the earliest and the oldest?
So the earliest one I have is a 1916 seven-passenger touring car, and I have several 1929 Chandlers,
no,
and one of them is a Cabriolet, convertible coupe.
Right.
Yeah, those are pretty cars, aren't
and
they?
And I've got a five-passenger sedan, and I've got a dual cowl touring car, Phaeton.
Those are the best.
And that body style was usually found in a luxury car.
Yeah, the Auburns and the Deuces and stuff. That's
right,
where that kind of
And a few
lived.
Mid-range car companies, Hudson, Page,
right,
offered one. But the Chandler was only in their small 6 version.
Interesting.
And was around $1,000.
That's a pretty good price for back then.
Back then, but it's kind of low.
Yeah.
Compared to any other dual cowl.
Sure.
Phaeton.
Interesting. Now, I have to ask, I mean, you have 18 of them, and of course you didn't buy them all at once, but over the years, you've sought them out and you've, you know, managed to make some, obviously some good deals and maybe some not so good deals. But where do you go to find? I mean, obviously there's a market, there's a community, a Chandler community, if you will. But how do you come upon these cars?
So in earlier days, you went to swap meets. You met people at car tours and from other clubs, networking.
Yeah.
There's the hobby club publications. You wrote letters back and forth in those days. You did
letters. I remember letters, stamps,
some phone calls, but mostly writing and traveling. And then you meet one, and they refer to somebody else.
Sure,
they knew that had one.
You get a network. What was your best? What was your best deal?
My best deal.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like picking your best grandkid, you know.
Well, let's go this way. What was the one that was most satisfying for you to find?
The most memorable one maybe was the 29 Cabriolet. I got that down in North Hollywood, and I was going down to Long Beach to look at an earlier one. But this person had advertised in one of the hobby magazines that he was looking for an engine for this 1920 Chandler coupe. And so I thought, well, on the way home, and I was going to go to Harris Swap Meet in Reno,
right,
I'd stop by and chit-chat. Well, turns out, yeah, he needed an engine, and he was property tax poor and thought maybe he'd sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought incorrectly that a newer Chandler would be easier to find an engine than an older one. And that wasn't the case. But the coupe turned out to be a convertible coupe.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know, was a real looker.
Yeah.
So, boy, I was all wound up and got home and I left a deposit and came down, I think, a week afterwards with a trailer and
sure
loaded it up.
Don't sell it until I come back. here's money.
It took me 3 years to find an engine.
Boy, I bet. And are these all four-cylinder motors? Or some of them are
sixes? Chandler built six-cylinder cars.
Okay.
And in addition, an eight-cylinder car in 27, 8, and 9.
Wow, they're all eight, straight eights.
Straight eights.
Yeah.
Wow.
And a big straight eight in 27, 8, and 9, and came out with a smaller eight in 1929 models.
Nice.
They must have been a goer then. For the...
It was a frisky car, that smaller eight.
Yeah. Lighter weight. You know,
very cool.
So you were telling us off air, you have an interesting employee story. And for those who don't know, he spent 35 years at a local small little firm known as Kenworth, one of the golden nuggets of businesses here in the Northwest.
Yeah. Made a couple of trucks up there, I hear.
Yes.
Yeah.
So is that the story? You have a story there or some other?
No, the story is about a Chandler employee.
Oh, great.
Way back around 1920 and 21, Chandler was really, really busy. They were doing very, very well. And they were hiring for their night shift parts department. And there were four young guys there that got together who realized they wanted to get into show business and whatever, and formed this little quartet. And when the boss wasn't around at night, they'd go into his office and rehearse their numbers and record it on the dictograph machine.
Ah, perfect.
Wow.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
So one night they went in and did their thing and left, but forgot to break the record of the dictograph mm-hmm. machine. The day boss comes on, turns the machine on, and he hears his quartet he didn't realize he had. So Bob Hope had to seek employment elsewhere.
Wow.
Poor Bob. Poor Leslie.
Yes.
But that's don't feel great. Sorry for him. He did okay.
Did he end up?
Yeah, he did well.
Ended up making out all right. You know, every time you talk about Chandler's, and of course you mentioned Bob Hope, I cannot help but think about Jack Benny and his Maxwell, because it's another one of those cars that, you know, was a big thing for a while and then faded away. And it makes me kind of wonder, you know, my wife and I actually own a 51 Hudson. And, you know, it's another car that was big for a while and, you know, Essex Terraplane, and then they sort of faded out. What was it, do you suppose, that kind of led to the Chandler going away?
There were more car companies passing away during the 20s
yeah.
than after the Depression and the big crash of 29. And a lot of people assume because 29 is the last Chandler that, you know, they
that,
died
that had to be
and
it. Yeah.
went in the poorhouse. But Mr. Chandler really and made lots of money. Because he sold to Hupmobile at a premium price.
Oh.
They wanted more capacity for making Hupmobiles. And he could see that the independents were going to finally be eaten up by the big fish. And so...
So they bought the factories more than the cars.
They bought the manufacturing facilities.
Yeah.
The deal was they make more you know, keep making Chandlers, but...
Sure.
It was never in their heart to do that.
Yeah,
it kind of sounds similar to what a lot of independent bottling companies did for soda.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as Coca-Cola and Pepsi started coming on the scene big times, they kind of made a deal
Green
with...
Green River went away.
That's right. And consequently, you have pretty much a few brands now.
So this is the mark of a Northwest guy. I said Green River, and he went, And for those of you who don't know, Green River was a lemon-lime soda that was popular up here for years and years and years.
Wow.
Used to be for sale at drive-ins and every place, and it just sort of faded into the distance. Now you can still buy it online at the... Old school candy and soda sites. You know,
yeah.
It's still out there, but not much. It was the early Mountain Dew.
Okay.
Don't ask me why I got off on this. It just made me think of. So tell me now, what was the most recent Chandler that you've purchased?
The most recent Chandler is in 1929 Royal 75. That's the small eight-cylinder sport coupe.
And was that a buy because you didn't have one, or you wanted another one of, or it was a special model? What drew that one to your eye?
I had too many. I should never have been tempted. But
wait, I'm sorry. You said too many? Those words came out of your mouth? How can you have too many cars? I'm not processing this.
I probably wouldn't admit it, but my sister keeps poking me and saying she wants to die first because she doesn't want to deal with my estate.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Well, you know, the car guy's biggest fear is that after we're dead, our wives will sell our cars for what we told them they cost.
But on this particular car, it's beautiful. I could never restore it for the money that it was offered to me. The person, I guess, needed to sell in a hurry, and I just barely shoehorned it into the garage.
Wow.
And you were talking off air about you got two places now. You got one on the west side of the mountains, another on the east side of Washington State, or central Washington, I guess. And you're looking to get a bigger space and more space?
So the plan is to sell the house and the building and backyard in the Crown Hill area in North Seattle, and then get a building put up on my 4.25 acres in Kittitas.
There you go.
So I can empty out the building and shoreline and have all my toys in one place.
Yes. Yeah.
That would be nice.
And you like to work on your own vehicles, do you not?
Oh, yeah. That's the fun part of it.
And how many of your vehicles actually drive?
So there's 1, 2, 3, 4 in operating condition.
Uh-huh.
Two are really good luckers. Two are, you know, not embarrassing.
Right.
And, of course, I got a couple real dogs. You can hear them woofing from here.
Ah, is that noise I hear?
And then some in the middle.
Sure.
So now how many of them are parts vehicles, and how many of them you just acquired for parts for the other ones to make them a more solid car?
So in the back corner of the Shoreline building, there's 6 or 8 frames that I've stripped parts off of.
Yeah.
So there's enough parts to fill a double car garage all the way up to the top of the roof.
Wow.
And you have to do that if you have a Chandler, because Chandler built and designed their own major components. A lot of the independents and their competitors back in those days, other than General Motors, bought from different suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
And Chandler built their own engines, transmissions, rear ends, axles.
Wow. So there's no parts exchange list for those things?
No, there's no. You don't buy an interchange manual because you're not going to find anything.
Yeah. That's actually pretty exciting because it means if you know what you have that fits Chandler is going to be genuine Chandler. There's not really any other way around it. Do you have opportunity to still find them out there that you want to get?
There's some hoarder in Seattle that's got them all. I have a hard time. No, after I've been at it so long, I've kind of cleaned everything up. I've even dragged 3 Chandlers out of South America. So
wow.
Well, you know, what's interesting is you've got a great book.
It's The Chandler Automobile, A History Including the Cleveland and Chandler Cleveland Marks. It's James H. Lackey, which you have kindly brought. We'll take a picture of it and put it up on the page.
Yeah, and what's interesting to me is you like working on them. You've got about 4 of them that are really street-worthy. And are they pretty well sought after? Is this a kind of a I can't to say that because we have got down to 5 seconds left, so I'm sorry. We just ran out of our time.
Hey, it's all right. Roger, thank you for so much for coming up and talking about Chandlers with us. We learned a lot tonight, no doubt.
Well, we're going to be right back with more of the show and a cool old car story for you on Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Super.
Today we decided to walk to school. The light counted. 15, 14, 41,
31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Street. Danny's smart, but he gets distracted.
I realized
he forgot his homework.
I hope he doesn't have another bad day at school.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's Understood.org, a free resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Go from misunderstanding to Understood.org. Brought to you by Understood and the Ad Council.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Hey, car enthusiast. Are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest-growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
This is Quentin Folk. I dig up old hot rods, and I also dig this podcast.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much.
For taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot.
For leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom. For taking you to your therapies. For understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Adam Kramer from Avance.com. You're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
It's time for Cars Confidential. And we're back with a story from the Old Car Nut, Book 1. What's up this week, Brady?
What makes you think it's Book 1?
Because it says Book 1.
Just because I wrote that in the script doesn't necessarily mean... Yes, it does.
But, you've gotten on my case about not going by the script.
Well, no, I didn't say you shouldn't. I just said you have to. We got a good one. This actually is from Book 1, and it is called Woodville Hill, A Test
Woodville.
Of Courage and Speed.
Woodville.
Gary
like
Hughes
that.
Shared this one, and it goes like this. The road between Butte and Helena, Montana, is now Interstate 15, but in the 60s, it was simply a two-lane highway known then as U.S. 91.
I've been on that.
Yeah. Leaving the A&W Root Beer Drive-In and heading towards Helena on U.S. 91, you encountered a hill known as Woodville Hill, climbed to the Continental Divide. It was straight. It was 14 miles long with a considerable elevation increase. Now, I've driven up that exact piece of road, and considerable is an understatement. As a teenager in the 60s, you could prove yourself by taking your ride to the top of Woodville Hill, turning around, and then timing how long it would take to get back to the A&W. Most speedometers at the time had a maximum of about 100 miles an hour, so the only method of determining the speed was by timing the trip. Any time less than 9 or 10 minutes was very respectable and earned bragging rights. Bobby always had the fastest time. He was an older kid. No one could ever top his time. I didn't like or hang out with Bobby because he was crazy bad, a little arrogant, and usually in trouble with the cops. Later, the fool changed his name to Evil and gained some notoriety crashing motorcycles. Several years later, I ended up in Seattle, and I met the perfect woman. She was gorgeous, drove a candy apple red 66 Mustang with a 289 V8 stick shift, and always had a cold beer for me in her refrigerator. Our first date was at a racetrack. It just doesn't get any better than that. It was easy for this car guy from Montana to fall in love with her. One day in 1970, we stopped at the Belkirk Motors, and for the first time saw the most desirable sports car to come about in decades, the Datsun 240Z. What a car. I can't say enough about the styling, the handling characteristics, and the power of this car. It was absolutely the most pleasurable driving experience I had ever encountered to that point. Colette and I had decided to make our relationship permanent, so we placed our name on the 8-month waiting list for a Z-car. Yep, it took that long to get one. The color we chose was British Racing Green with a black interior, and we took delivery in the summer of 1971 and used that beautiful Mustang as a trade. Hey, you can't keep them all. The following year, we drove out to visit some relatives in Minnesota and eastern Montana. Well, returning home to Seattle, we arrived at the top of Woodville Hill late in the evening. Now, Interstate 15 was just completed and was now a beautiful, newly paved 4-lane interstate. I looked over at my bride, and she was sound asleep in the passenger seat. Memories of my youth overwhelmed me, and I mentally regressed to an earlier time. Once again, I was 16 years old at the top of Woodville Hill. The difference this time was I was driving a beautiful aerodynamic machine that conquered hills like this. The speedometer in the 240Z had a maximum of 160 miles an hour. I'd never driven a car 160 miles an hour. Although I would have no one to brag to because the A&W was probably closed at this hour, it seemed like the perfect opportunity to beat Bob's time at last. I saw the sign marking the curve in the road for the new bypass when the car was achieving 130 miles an hour. In an instant, I aged from 16 to adulthood and said to myself, "Holy crap, this road is no longer straight." I gained a lot more respect for the braking and suspension of that automobile while I was navigating the curve ahead. And in the road with all four wheels locked up, there was a screeching sound coming from the tires and another screeching sound coming from my mouth. I learned that the perfect woman gets very grumpy when awakened suddenly by screaming. For the rest of the trip, she wouldn't let me drive anymore and didn't like me much. The good news is she stayed married to me, and we've tested that 240Z to speeds of up to 130 miles an hour. Some cars you can keep. It still has a place in our garage and in our hearts.
That is funny.
I had no idea up until that moment that I could scream like an 11-year-old girl, but apparently I could.
And he was, and she wasn't. She just got really mad.
Can you imagine waking up from a sound sleep?
Yes.
Drifting sideways, you know, a foot and a half off the ground. Jeez.
You know, that reminds me, my family and I, we were coming back from the eastern side of the mountains, and we were heading down I-90. And it had been raining, and there was a lot of cars as it gets pretty bogged up at the, you know, at that time of the year.
Oh, yeah.
As you're coming back over on a Sunday. We were cruising along, and all of a sudden, like a shot out of the dark, comes this little car, rice burner, screaming along on the left-hand side on the shoulder, passing all the cars. Hmm. And I'm driving along, and the next thing you know, I'm going, "That fool, what in the world?" And all of a sudden, the car goes right into the medium, spins around, and slams into the ground. It didn't flip. It just screech, and by the into the grass.
Dug up a huge
Devitt, and as soon as that, I was going right by it, and as soon as that thing has stopped, the passenger side door flew open, and this girl just jumps right out, and she's just like running away and screaming at the top of her lungs, because she probably for the whole time was saying, "You idiot, don't do this,"
or words to that effect,
yes, and I will never forget it, and I just thought, dude, I ain't stopping. He didn't roll it, so
that's a miracle right there.
He was a miracle. But folks, don't try to pass on the shoulder just to get around somebody.
You know, now there's a whole series of cool shows that are under the Live PD moniker, and there's several of them where they do car chases, PD chases, you know,
right?
Police departments from all over the country. And they see, you show these guys, the body cams, the car cams, dashboard cams and stuff, catch these guys doing stuff like that. And it's kind of a nice show to watch because, first off, you get to see an hour and a half, 2 hours worth of people who are way dumber than you.
Bonehead.
You know, yeah, it makes you feel like, well, I'm a genius compared to these guys. And I can actually drive a car without hitting something because apparently these guys cannot. It's fascinating stuff to watch. And you see guys passing on the shoulder, left and right. It's just, it's frightening. You don't realize how absolutely stupid that is until you see somebody doing it from the dashboard of a police car.
or I've seen the They have the dash cam recordings on YouTube occasionally,
oh, yeah.
and you just
oh, yeah.
see people doing that. And
crazy
and it,
stuff.
It is crazy, and but you know that's the beauty of. being a human, you can be crazy or you can be smart.
Or you can be alive. There's always that.
And yes, there is.
So Woodville Hill, A Test of Courage and Speed, is, again, from the Old Carnot Book 1. Thanks to David Dickinson and the compiler of the Old Carnot Book series. Obviously, as we do pretty much every week when we're not reading one of Lance's stories, we thank David for doing that. You can get the Old Carnot Book. And, you know, Christmas is coming. It would be a really good thing to put under the tree, one, two, or three, or all of them. TheOldCarNutBook.com, you can get them on Amazon. They would make a terrific gift for any car person, male or female. And by the way, a quick shout-out to our friend of the show, Carly Brogren. Carly owns a marvelous 37 Lincoln Zephyr, which she is on the way back from Los Angeles right now on a train because she's left Amelia, the car, down there to be repainted by Jane Winfield.
Now, what color is that car?
It's kind of like a creamsicle. It's orange and cream. It's a beautiful car, but apparently she's having it repainted.
I think I have interviewed her. She's one of the interviewees at the Hot Wheels Legends Seattle tour.
Oh, could
and,
be. Yeah.
She goes everywhere.
Yeah, she likes to have the car, you know, have its picture taken, and she's having a lot of fun with it. And
she's getting it painted?
Apparently, yeah, that's the story. That's what's on the
By
Facebook.
Who?
I don't Gene Winfield, I think.
Gene Winfield.
I think.
A legendary.
Yeah. At least he counseled her on the colors. I haven't followed the entire story, but it's
okay.
on her Facebook page, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah, she's cool. When I launched the Chrome and Rust.
And her husband Steve
YouTube.
For that matter is also a nice fellow.
Yeah, I've met her. She's wonderful.
And their dogs are nice dogs too. Very nice dogs. Airedales.
Well, she already had a beautiful paint job, so it'll be very interesting to see.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it should turn out really nice. I think she'll get purple and green with a big Rat Fink decal on the back. No, maybe not.
Big green. The big green with Harry in the center
That's
or something
right.
like that. And a big snout sticking out of the back.
Ooh.
Well, stick with us. We'll be right back with the trivia question
Ooh.
And the wrap-up of this week's show. For all your parts cleaning needs, turn to Ravenstone Vapor Honing. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is a fast, economical, safe alternative to standard media blasting. Ravenstone Vapor Honing uses a system developed by Rolls-Royce back in 1944. A water-based cleaning system that restores parts back to factory condition with no scouring or heating to metal or damage to rubber and plastic parts. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is located in Snohomish, Washington. RavenstoneVaporHoning.com, redefining the way parts restoration is done.
Hang on till right after these messages.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes. And you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Looking for a job worth talking about? Teaching is creative, collaborative, and intellectually challenging. See why teachers have better work stories at teachdfw.org and learn more about becoming a teacher. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
This is Vince LaViolette from Shelby American in Las Vegas, and you're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Help us if you can. You're an El Camino. El Camino man. Only you can understand.
Welcome back. It's Around the Wheel. This is where we talk about the upcoming events, the weekly trivia questions, and other cool stuff. Just before we got on the air here, Steve was threatening to get a giant rat tail to stick underneath the display of my rat truck when it's finished. Maybe so. You know,
like
I was up
you
at
ran
the,
it over.
I was up at the giant Monroe swap meet and holiday cool stuff fair a couple of weeks ago, and I found an old Derigold milk box from you know, like used to sit on your front porch.
It's
white and it's got the logo on it and everything. I think it's going to be part of my display.
I thought you meant like the Derigold box that you were looking for originally.
Oh, the actual ice cream truck box. No. Shane and I are going to make one.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we got a plan. Shane's got a plan.
Okay.
Every time I ask him about it, he says, no, I got it. So I'm not sure exactly what he's got, but it's going to be interesting.
Right.
But yeah, it was kind of cool to see those things up there. Anyway, last week, when last we left our heroes, we had listed a trivia question that when Lance was here last week sitting on the show, you guys didn't do the trivia question because you didn't have the answer. And
that's right.
I did. I'm sorry. I was sick last week. I apologize. It was not a pretty sight. But the question was, what is the traffic count on the nation's highways daily? And there actually is a number. Now, I have to hedge this a little bit because it isn't always this number. It basically is only, you know, according to this particular piece of information. And it's number of cars, okay? So this was true when this piece of information was written down. Maybe more now.
Right.
But the answer, which we did not get an answer for, so I can just tell
you
what it is.
I can imagine you didn't get an answer.
135 million cars travel the nation's roads and interstates every day. 135 million cars. And it's like, well, yeah. But if you think about that for a minute, that's a lot of traffic. And that's just cars. That's not trucks. That's not
that's
you
just
know,
cars.
Just
How do they
cars.
Differentiate the two?
Well, apparently there's studies that they do. I'm not privy to their methodology, but that's what it is.
Wow,
135 million cars every day. So congratulations to nobody because nobody came up with this one. But I have a killer trivia question for next week. Even Nathan Lipinski will not know. Well, of course, if I say that, he'll know. But 1923 was a banner year for cool new stuff in the automotive business. Lots and lots of new inventions happened in 1923, more than most other years for some reason. Don't know why. But there were some spectacular things that happened that related to feminism in 1923. It was a banner year for feminism in the auto industry. I want to know why. What was so special about 1923 and feminism? If you know the answer, you can go to our Facebook page and answer the trivia question. You don't even need to do anything. Just put a post up and say, I know why 1923 was a banner year. Or you can send us an email at contactus@horsepowerchromeandrust.com. Or you can send us a Facebook Messenger thing. You can do what some people do is send me private messages on Messenger, which is hilarious because half the time I don't see them because it's a little red dot up in the corner of my phone. But yeah, please do. You too could win an opportunity to get your picture posted with the coveted chrome-plated brass-plaqued bucket
just
of barn find dust.
An old swarmy bucket of barn
It's
find
a bucket
dust.
Of rusty colored
yes,
water
is.
That has dust in it. And it's cool because it came from a barn someplace and you too could win. And we will do that one next week. By the way, we got special shows coming up for the holidays. So the Christmas show, the New Year show, please do not miss them. They are going to be very, very cool. And we are, as we have mentioned before, in addition to on Podomatic.com, we're on iHeartRadio podcast. We are on iTunes. We're on Spotify. So, you know, there's a whole bunch of places you can choose from to get Horsepower Chrome and Rust. Please do. And please like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our other websites and stuff because it's very cool. By the way, iHeart is doing a, like, your favorite podcast contest. So please mention us on there because that would be very cool for us. Thanks to our guest Roger Anderson, who came in and talked about his Chandler cars. 18 Chandler cars this week. A lot of great stories. Thanks for liking and following us. For Shane Osborne and Steve Johann, I'm still Brady Wright, saying keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and your foot to the floor, and your face right up there in the package tray. Please join us next week as we light the tires on another Horsepower Chrome and Rust.